Well. As Dundalk fan, Dan Pope said tonight, there's so many uncertainties in life, except taxes, death, and Dickie Kelly scoring against Waterford. Well, it made for a hell of a night. Pingu's here with me tonight to go through the game. Pingu, how are you, pal?
Good, yeah, delighted after that result.
These are the podcasts we want to do, just upbeat, happy ones where we win.
Exactly. I'm delighted we finally won a game and I'm able to get on and show my face. So it hasn't happened too often. I started to think I was the blink, but nah, look, it's a great result. I mean, you know, this was the game you had to win. You know, there was no qualms about it, and it looked towards the end like they were going to maybe snatch a draw out of it, but thankfully we seen it over the line, and just a brilliant result, isn't it?
Yeah, and look, and it's, I think we've seen ourselves up our game against Shamrock Rovers, and you know, there was that little patch, real purple patch where we played Sligo and that and Bowes, and we got results from them all, and you're thinking we can really mix it up against these big lads, but when it came to teams in and around us, we didn't seem to be able to pull out a result. So to do it tonight when we most needed it, I think it was a welcome relief. Another big night in Oriel Park. Like, you're probably a bit like myself, I assume, just watching it on the stream, but you know, you could feel the atmosphere coming through, couldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, look, after the first 3 minutes, you were just hoping you were going to be able to actually see the match, but now you know what's good is it's been a crazy week to be a Dundalk fan, as seems to be the case the last while, you know, but at the end of it all, football took centre stage and we got the win and the team took to centre stage. And I think that's something that has to be remembered at the minute. While there's a lot going on behind the scenes, you have to continue that support of the first team and help them get over the line and help keep us up. And it's just brilliant that we were able to do it. You know, it's brilliant. As I said there, like, those last 15 minutes after Peter Cherry pulled off that worldy of a save, we got a chance to go forward, and then it just looked, in my head, it was just like, these are going to score. They're going to, like, at some point they're going to score. And just thank God that was pessimism on my part and we were able to see the game out, because how many games this season has that been the case, you know, where we've come close to victory and just at the death, you know, it's been kind of snatched from us. So just to get the win, and I mean, it's been a long, long time since you've seen a crowd of that size at Oriel Park as well. Like, you go pre-COVID, you go back to days, probably 2018 when we won the league title, or 2019, I think it was, when we won the league title. That's probably the last time you've seen the back of the goal so packed. And it's just, yeah, it's a great moment for supporters. I mean, we're going through the ringer, and we're going to get to a little bit later where everything that's happening off the field. But to be able to just see Dundalk win, regardless of performances, you know, you take all that by the wayside. Right now, performances can be shocking as long as we get 3 points. I think that's more. And to be able to give supporters that little bit of a lift at the end of the game, and you just hear the roar and you hear the shed singing throughout the game, like, that's Dundalk, isn't it? That's what we're hoping. That's what you expect all the time.
But I think you could see, you know, at the end of the match there, you know, Vinny bringing everybody over to the shed and stuff like that. Like, there was times where, you know, we were all saying, where's the players going to meet fans and everything at the end? But there's a real coming together right now. And you're hoping that's going to be the difference. I mean, on the various podcasts this week, I heard it mentioned that, you know, if you're a first division team coming up and if you're looking, who do you want to play in a playoff, they mentioned you'd want to play Dundalk. I'm telling you, in Oriel Park, nobody wants to go and play there. One, whether they just don't like the pitch or whatever, but that atmosphere is, you know, it's intimidating. It would put many off their game. And like, if you're playing that side of the shed and that noise is coming out, like, you know, you'd be moving away from it fairly quickly if you're an opposition player. It would be intimidating. And I think that atmosphere created in Oriel Park is going to be the difference of us either staying away from that relegation playoff completely, or if something happened in the next three games that we ended up in it, that'll be the difference, I still think, to get us through and stay in this league.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you've got obviously two of the last three games now are in Oriel as well, and the only away game is just up the M1. So you'd expect for the last three games. Supporters are going to be out in numbers for that there. But yeah, it's, as I say, I'm delighted with the result. I think, you know, right before the goal, it was one of them, as you say, it could have been 8-4 to Dundalk tonight.
Honestly,
the amount of chances. And even with all those chances we had and the goals we could have scored, it was such a pedestrian game for a large part, particularly in the first half. You know,
it was like a chess match at times, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I don't want to get bogged down in performances, right? But that was a proper kind of relegation game. You know, that was kind of a bottom end of the table game where no team wanted to kind of show their cards, put their cards out there, and particularly in the middle of the park. I think once Dumigan came on, I think that kind of helped. Dumigan looked a little bit like a young Chris Shields. Dare I say his name? We try to get through every podcast without mentioning him, but Dumigan in that second half just shored up the back four. You know, he kind of marshalled in front of them and was able to get on the ball, and he was picking out passes. And I think, you know, when you look at nominations for player of the season at the end of the season, Dumigan's going to be up there. I think another player is going to be there, because I don't think it's any real coincidence that our change in fortune has changed since he's come back into the team is Sean Murray.
Yeah.
And we lacked his energy big style on Monday. And I mean, tonight, just the runs he was making, just everything, it's something we haven't seen enough of this season, you know. And as I say, I feel like part of that kind of purple patch we've had a couple of weeks back definitely has to correlate with Murray coming back into the team.
Yeah. A fit Murray too. I think we've seen him at times this year and he hasn't been fit, and he doesn't get that explosive energy that we've seen there tonight. Now, it was Polak's probably about twice tonight that the referee decided not to do anything about. But I think a fit Sean Murray in particular, you know, I've seen it over the course of the week there was a, you know, back into the old anniversaries of European football, and it brought me back to that Molde game when he scored the header as well. You know, like, he's just... When he's fully fit, he's a real super player, and he's a big player for this team in particular, because I just don't think we have players of his quality who just demand the ball all the time and who have, you know, several things in their locker to pull it out and do something with it. And like you say, I think he's definitely been the difference since he's come back in. Him fully fit has just made a massive difference.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you've kind of hit the nail on the head. And as you know, we've been critical, and probably me more so than anybody else, been very critical this season of players not putting in effort or anything like that. And you just see that effort that he put in tonight. Like, he was making 40, 50-yard sprints to get in the box at times. And even towards the end of the game, I think there was a ball passed out to him on the left-hand side, like over by the dugout. And he flicked it over his head and ran onto himself and burst past everyone and nearly got through. And it's just little things like that there, you know, make a big difference. And we talk about, you know, just because Monday's still kind of fresh in the head, where everyone was saying, you know, Dundalk just didn't look like they looked a little bit like they were going through the motions at times. Yeah. And tonight for a while we looked like that too. But when you have a midfielder that's willing to push on and join the attack in the way that he does, and making those runs, and not just going forward, but actually those recovery runs to get back and support as well when we're out of possession, I think that just makes a hell of a lot of difference. This is probably as good a time as any to say, get your vote to him for man of the match. I'm not going to tell you who's mine just yet.
I think both of us probably have showed our hand a little too early on that one, pal.
Exactly. If anybody wants to win the 15-inch pizza, send in your man at a match predictions. Who you think we might pick? I might shock you. I might shock you. I might not with that one. But it was like, as I say, it was overall it was a decent game. I mean, it was a great game to be neutral. I see everyone talking about the referee, and referees have got so much publicity. Our poor refereeing's got so much publicity over the season. I kind of don't want to mention it. Yeah, but just when we were talking about Murray,
it didn't cost us anything tonight, so I think you kind of go, okay.
Yeah, although I mean, Greg Halford could be done for GBH after his what he done on Murray towards the end of the game. I mean, that was one of the strangest calls I've ever seen in a game. Like, I don't know how that was given against Murray.
No, No, it's extremely, extremely hard to see. Kieran Burke has come back to say it actually that the playoff would be in a neutral venue. So my theory on having to go to Oriel Park is completely thrown out the window. So cheers for that one, Kieran. a lot of people coming in just talk about the referee decision. But we'll talk about the game first, like I say, and then we'll probably go through the many matters off field in Oriel Park this week alone. Finally, have a bit of balance back on our wings. Duffy one side, Kelly the other. And it's probably no surprise that the opening chances fall to both those players. You know, Dan Kelly will probably, if he sees back the chance that he skied over in the first half, he'll probably kick himself. Thankfully, he made up for it later on, so it didn't matter. But he had time to bring it down, control it, and then blast over. He'll kick himself get that much time and space and not to put that away, or at least hit the target.
Yeah, and I think Duffy had a proper go at him too, because that was when Duffy may hit that run out on the left and squared it across to him, and you would just, you feel like you have to put those away, don't you? But yeah, we looked a lot more balanced across the field of play, didn't we? And like throughout the game, and it's getting them players involved. You know, like we've said, there's been games this season where you would say Duffy's anonymous, but it's the ball isn't getting out to him. And tonight we just seem to get it into those wider areas and we seem to push forward. But I don't know. I keep saying yeah a lot tonight. But
look, we did see that Duffy of old, you know, for that chance that he curled just past the post in the first half, getting the ball out wide, cutting it inside past a few players and bending one in at the far post. It just didn't seem to have enough bend on it, but it was good to see he had the confidence to go and take it on again. And, you know, it was one of them we're all hanging on till the very end, till it just went past the post to see if it was going to come back or what was going to happen with it. But, you know, it was good to see that from Duffy. We know he has those sort of moves in his locker, and it's just a pity they don't come off as more goals this season maybe, but we have seen him in previous.
Yeah. I suppose, look, we don't want to talk negatively about players rotting tonight, but it looks kind of like Sloggett is showing. Like, I don't know if people that are listening in remember last year, towards the end of the season, he just looked out on his feet. He made a mistake. I can't remember if it was Friday. I think it was last Friday for one of the goals, and then for the first goal.
Yeah,
and
for
then
the throw-in, yeah.
Tonight he made a couple of mistakes right in front of goal as well, you know, and he just, I think he's had to fill that void as defensive midfielder for the last while. And he just looks a little bit out on his feet, because, I mean, 3 or 4 weeks ago he was outstanding in games, and I definitely feel that, not for him, and I wish him well from his injury, and I hope it's nothing serious, but I think putting Dumigan going in there in his place, I think just balanced us out just that little bit more, and we seem to take charge of the game a little bit once Sloggett actually went out of the game. Yeah. So, as I say, I don't want to talk negatively too much about any of the players, and I don't want to put a dampener on a great result. But I just do think that was a little bit of a turning point for us as well once he came off. And
so many times though, Pingu, this year, just before halftime, we're clock watching. I'm not too sure what goes through the players' minds, but we've been called out on conceding just before halftime, just before full time, and the real sucker punch times to concede goals. But tonight, we were finally the team who scored and took that. It's a different conversation for Vinny at halftime. We're buoyed up. You know, they're going in the opposite direction to that, going, you know, how are we behind on this? We're surely close enough in this game. It's a different game plan for them. They know they're going to have to be more expansive in the second half. But, you know, for Dan Kelly, I'm glad he scored as well, coming back after injury and everything this year for him. It's not been easy. It's a seventh goal against Waterford. They must be sick to death of him scoring goals against them.
Yeah, and you know what? I think it's a better goal even than it looked on telly, because when you watch it back, the replay, the goalkeeper's actually made his kind of vision of the goal very small, the way the goalkeeper's running out. So he only has a tight little area to get to, like, to knock that ball past the goalie. So that was a great finish, like a really, really good finish. And I mean, he was probably had like Kelly was probably going from being the villain at halftime because he had so many chances, you know, and so many half chances to being the hero on the night, you know. And I think he ran them ragged, didn't he, in the first half, really, when you look back on it. But yeah, that was, for me, it was a great finish. It was a great time to score because there was nothing in it in the first half between either team, really, you know. And I think that I think that knocked the wind out of the sails of Waterford a little bit because we were on top at the start of the second half too, you know. But it looked very much like they were going to make life difficult for us. They probably were going to be the happier with the draw because they had to have a game in hand on us,
of course,
instead of chasing us. But I think they were just hoping they would have caught us on the break. So to get that goal, you know, I think just they had to kind of open up a little bit more. And we probably hoped we would have got a couple more goals out of it, and we should have. But I mean, have to give full credit to the Waterford goalie, don't we? He was second half, he was class. Yeah. Second half, he was very, very good.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul Martin, people have just said already maybe he was man of the match tonight. And, you know, I think Darius was giving it to him on the comms tonight too. But even the start of the second half, you know, he pulls off a fantastic double save as well. That, you know, it's especially the second one from Hooban, it's point blank, like he knows very little about it. Some good saves from Murray as well. I think the only thing from Murray's performance tonight is he didn't score. You know, I think he'd done everything else was absolutely perfect for him tonight, just bar maybe a goal.
Yeah, and I think he come up against probably any other goalkeeper tonight and he probably does score. You know, I think Martin was just like a man possessed. Like, I mean, both goalkeepers were brilliant tonight. You know, as I say, like we spoke a little bit earlier about Cherry's save and on the 73rd minute. But I just think that I think like Murray had a couple of chances too and Martin just seemed equal to them, you know. And he was a class apart, wasn't he? He was the difference between a 1-0 and an 8-4 win, Chris.
Yeah, exactly. Just as well we don't do a score prediction anymore. That'd be way out. I see Flano. I think he was away for an operation, did I hear? On the stream tonight, so he just woke up. Flano, we actually won a game in Oriel Park, and life is rosy again. So you can stay off your medication now. It's everything's all right again.
Flano, I think your meds are acting up because I just praised the player, so it hasn't been too much. This season.
Maybe that's why he's trying to figure out what's going on. He's like, I'm hallucinating now with his meds. So, like, when we think about it now, the result tonight, Pingu, like, we'll have a look at the table later on, like we normally do. But it was one of those nights where we really needed to pull a result out too, because with Drogheda dropping points, with Finn Harps dropping points, if we didn't win tonight, you know, it'd be another night we'd be saying that we never took full advantage of it. But we finally done that tonight, and it's a psychological thing more than anything, isn't it? Especially with the Drogs match coming up. There's a point now between us.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you look at everything else that's going on that we're going to talk about later, and a loss or even a draw tonight, and the hostility you're going to get going into the team. As I said, the biggest thing for me is the supporters are backing the players and backing Vinny on the pitch. And that's what's needed right now, you know. So getting those 3 points just means that there's a little bit of momentum that was lost over the last week or so. Are going back into the team now, going up to draw the game on Thursday. But I just think that, you know, sorry, I lost my train of thought there, Chris. I'll let you describe. I don't know what I was going to say.
Probably still in the back of your mind, you're thinking, did I praise players earlier? Yeah. No, this can't be right. No, but you're right. Like, look, the most important thing is the atmosphere is when the players are on that pitch, the support is 100% behind them. Like you say, there's a million other things going on in Oriel Park that could very easily change the focus of the players at times, considering their careers, or not their careers, should I say, their futures are very much up in the air. You know, do you look for another club? Do you take an offer that's lower now? Will Dundalk come back with another offer? You know, it's these guys' livelihoods that we're talking about here. And that's to go out and to pull a performance like they did tonight. You can't help but be immensely proud of them. And the work that Vinny's doing as well, because he seems to have, I'd say, two hands tied behind his back with everything else that's happening off the field. And look, we might as well start talking about it now, because it's, I'm fed up with the merry-go-round, tell the truth, in Oriel Park, that every bloody week we can't just wait in between results and talk about football matters. There's so much going on off field. What do we take first? Do you want to talk about the Shedside Army today in relation to this game, or do you want to talk about TakeOver? I'll let you pick first.
Yeah, no, I suppose we go with the, like, the elephant in the room, like the biggest, well, not the biggest elephant in the room, but probably the thing that happened obviously today and yesterday is the club released their statement yesterday about, you know, anyone that off flares, smoke bombs, fireworks into the ground are going to get lifetime bans. You know, and it's just, it's the tone deafness of that, you know, that is as we say, look, we'll talk about the TakeOver in a little bit, but the club hasn't reached out to supporters in months. There's been nothing, absolutely nothing in months, nothing from the board, nothing from the sporting director. There's been nothing from anybody associated with the club apart from the manager, who's getting pressed on off-field matters every week in his post-match interviews. And then the club comes out and, like, whatever everyone's opinions of flares and this kind of stuff, like, I mean, I understand, because back 6-7 years ago, I remember the club putting out something similar, a similar statement over that, you know, that the club gets fined quite heavily for the use of flares and, you know, and stuff like that there. So there is that element to it. But to come out after not addressing the supporters in months, and it is months, you know, like, when did Vinny take over? July? Was it July, I think?
Yeah.
So you've got three or four months now in the difference from when anyone from the club has last reached out to the supporters. And the first thing they can say when they finally do is, if anyone's caught with flares, you get a lifetime ban. On top of that, you have the situation today, and Chris, you could talk about this now in a second, where, you know, the Shedside Army lads who've been, for as long as the time, like, I haven't been involved in the club in almost 10 years, and going back 12, 13 years ago when I was first involved in it, they've been painting underneath, since the YDC was built, they've been painting underneath the YDC.
Yeah, they've always used the car park for it,
getting their banners and all set up, and by all accounts today, they were not notified by the club, but all their stuff is now gone, has been removed. And this is probably, what, 2 or 3 weeks after they were given, like, they raised money for flags and banners and things like that there, and that's their property, and I understand the club is letting them use that facility, but you should have the decency to contact them and tell them you're going to remove these kind of things. So I'll let you, Chris, kind of go over a little bit of the statement that was they released today.
Yeah, look, before I do that, like, I mean, I think it's awful sad. I mean, I remember when Aaron Lawless was still there and the fans were coming back, you know, there was a lot of consultation between the Shed lads and the club at that stage when Aaron was in the role of stadium manager. And on the town end, on the bottom where the town end of the Shed is, there was a big area that he gave over to the lads to hang their banners and have it as a designated area for it. So to say, hey, you can use all this area, no problem at all, we encourage you to be here. And then the actions today to go and then bin all their materials to use to make these banners, it flies in the face of everything that, you know, like they're saying that and how they've acted over previous years to what they're doing right now. And it's just, it's awful worrying at times. I hate to see, you know, similar to my own situation earlier this year, I hate to see the club turning against people who just love the club and do loads of things for the club. And that's my big fear. You know, the atmosphere that we've seen over the past few weeks and the results we've got which may or may not have had something to do with that. The Shedside lads have a lot to do with creating that atmosphere at times. And I understand it's not for everybody either, but I think we can all agree that it does help create a real frantic atmosphere at times, and a real atmospheric feeling within the stadium. But it got to the point where the guys, I suppose, felt that they had to put out some sort of a statement today. So it said that, to read from the statement here, it's our club, our passion, our work, from the Shedside Army. And it said, the Shedside Army is a community level group that has a range of Dundalk FC fans who put their time into making displays for the games. As many people would know, this group has been using the Youth Development Centre, or the YDC, for their preparations for displays for the last number of years. In preparation for this crucial game, for a relegation battle between Waterford, members of the group went to collect their paints and materials, which were stored in the YDC car park. Many of these supplies have been brought out of the pockets for the guys who collected them, as well as from the GoFundMe. Well, actually, no, the GoFundMe hadn't been drawn down yet. The members were shocked to realize that the paints, materials, and any previous displays had been removed. A member of the group said that they've been making these displays in the Youth Development Centre for years and has never had any issue until now. They weren't given any warning about this or anything either, which seems to be really, really disappointing from the club. I understand that during the week, we've probably seen on social media that there was a call maybe for some protest banners again, maybe aimed at the owners or something like that. Was that why the club decided to make a move like this? I don't know. I'm speculating now when I say that. But it's awful coincidental, is what I would say, that at a time when the public knowledge that there may be some sort of a protest tonight, that materials and previous displays are all removed from the YDC is... It's shocking. It's a shocking move from the club, I think. I think what they would have been far better off doing is working a lot closer with the Shedside Army. If Vinny comes out all week long, we're seeing interviews with Vinny saying, you know, we're nothing without the fans in this club. They created such an atmosphere. You know, there's a special bond between the players and the supporters. He's bringing all the players over towards the shed and everything here at the end for an applause and adulation towards the players. And then for the materials that some of these guys use to create that atmosphere to be disposed of without their knowledge. It doesn't make any sense to me.
No, and I think just to kind of preface, you know, all of this as well, the last two weeks or the last couple of weeks at the Bows game and at the Pats in the Cup game, there was a smoke bomb thrown on the field right next to Peter Cherry. So that's something nobody agrees with. And I've seen multiple people involved in the Shedside Army condone, you know, making sure they're not condoning that kind of behaviour. Yep. and talking up against that. So I don't think there's any surprise that, number one, the statement was released yesterday warning people that were going to get lifetime bans. And number two, that the stuff went missing today, this morning.
Yeah.
Not in retaliation, but after people went public about protests going to happen tonight. I think both of those situations were both warning shots from within the club. I can call it speculation, but I've been involved in football long enough to know that that's not just coincidental. You know, these things have came out because of what was due to happen tonight. And I mean, I seen somebody say there, I think Flano said, you know, they didn't do a good job of making sure that no stuff went into the ground, as we seen at the opening few minutes of the game and towards the end of the game, stuff still went off. And that was, by all accounts, and I've seen a couple of tweets from people involved in the Shed saying, I mean, that's two fingers up to the statement and to what they've done, you know, which they're entitled to it. You know, there's obviously their safety factors. But the flares and everything adds to the atmosphere. I mean, the club have put out Instagrams praising it. The FEI have put out Instagrams praising, you know.
They use it on promo material all the time, don't they?
Yeah, so there's a place for it. And this has been an issue, as I say, for like 6-7 years now. So where is all of this coming from? You know, why has this not been sorted yet? If you watch the Rovers game today, I seen Mandrell's second goal, and you can just about see it because there's flares after going off, you know, smoke on the pitch. So it's not just the Dundalk Football Club thing. And what I don't get too is both of the instances with the smoke bombs going on the field happened in away grounds. So why are Dundalk FC getting fined for it? Because there's security present at those games too. So why is the security at Dalyman Park or Richmond Park or Inchicore, sorry? Why are those clubs not being fined? Because they've got the security that searches away fans going into the ground. So I'm not trying to say, and I'm not trying to absolve some of these people of the blame for these things, but like, why is Dundalk feeling the need that they have to come out and put this out? Like, why? Obviously, the FEI are fining the club for it, but why is it the club's fault? Well, as I say, going back to the original point, sorry, Chris, I do think this is definitely not just a coincidence that both of those situations came out tonight. And I just see when you were going through the statement, Mike Tracy's put up a tweet, said good win tonight and tyrannical behaviour towards the Shedside Army today, which, I mean, that sums up if Mike, who I know he's not involved or he's indirectly involved in the club right now, I know he's not full time or he has no real involvement in the club, but if he doesn't know something like that is going out or something like that is happening, this is stuff that is obviously happening locally.
Yes. So it begs the question of who ordered that to happen and who's let it happen, you know, and who's removed it. I mean to go to the broader question is if these were because of the pressure that Peak Six could be feeling towards the fans, hostility, I suppose, with the fans at the moment. That brings us to our next topic of Rife this week, and our friend of the podcast here, Dan McDonald, seems to be in the middle of it all. Is the potential sale of Dundalk Football Club from Peak Six to a new, I think it's safe to say, a new consortium, as that seems to be the options on both sides. What's your take on what we know so far with regards to potential consortiums who could be interested? What's your feelings behind them? And I suppose then we can go into what you prefer and your feelings on the whole thing.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, we discussed this because it was only kind of breaking news on Sunday, Monday. So on Monday's podcast, we talked about it a little bit. But as the week's gone on...
You waited for me to do it.
Yeah, we wait on you, pal. Well, you were messaging in anyway, so it was like you're on the pod. But, you know, we've heard of two definite, from what I'm led to believe, and I don't know how true all this is, I think there's three actual potential bids going in for the club. But there's two we seem to have a lot of information on. One is a Northern Irish-based consortium. The owner of Glentoran, Ali Poor, who's a Welsh Iranian owner, I think he's involved. I don't know how much involvement he has in that consortium. Again, we're led to believe that was brought forward by Mags Bourne, the former Sunderland chief executive. I think it came out in Dan's post that she might not actually be actively involved in that consortium, but she brought it towards Peak Six and just kind of facilitating that deal. And then there's just like, there's mad stuff has came out about his connections, which again, I don't want to get too much into because it's all...
We all went down the rabbit hole on Twitter this week.
thanks to Counter Mole for that one. Then the second consortium seems to be a locally based consortium. Again, the only thing we kind of know strongly suggested is the Stats Sports are involved. There's talk that obviously Andy Connolly is involved in that too, but there's not as much being said about that. But StatSport seemed to be involved in that local consortium. And it seems to be a case that they've taken on a more active role in the discussions with Peak Six over that. On, I think it was Wednesday, the talk was that it was a done deal with the Northern Irish consortium. Again, Dundalk loves its rumours, but it seemed to be that it was leaning that way. And then on Friday, I think it was.
Which is today. Not, that was
today,
morning,
sorry,
wasn't
yeah.
It? Yeah, Dan, newsletter kind of.
Yeah, I think they've been given what, another, they've been given over the weekend or into next week now, that the local base, to kind of come up with a plan. Again, according to Dan, and he would be quite reliable with his sources, but Dan was saying that his StatSports have kind of been told that they want the club pretty much for nothing, and they want money left in the kitty as well, because I think there was 2 million left in the kitty, I think, when Peak Six came in, so they want to have some money left in there. And I think right. That maybe is where the talk of Andy Connolly's involvement is. Well, if we left you 2 million in the kitty, why are you leaving us bone dry, kind of, when, and we have okay. to pay for the privilege, you know?
Yeah.
But Peak Six want some kind of financial, you know, they want someone to actually buy it, to pay for the privilege to run the club and to have money left in the kitty. So, again, we can only talk in speculation, because we're not privy to the conversations that are being had, but 2 million is the price tag they've slapped on it. I think Peak Six are going to be happy for a six-figure sum. Don't know how little or how much in the six figures that is. And I think StatSports are looking for about 250 grand to 500 grand left in the kitty, from what I gather as well. And we just have to kind of see where it goes. But I suppose before I give my take on it, Chris, I'd like to get your take on your thoughts kind of on how this week has unfolded and which group you would be more comfortable.
I think it's another crazy week. In you know when you start to see a ton of messages coming in and you're tagging a lot on Twitter, you're like, oh no, here comes another one. How bad is this story going to be? And you never know, because there's extremes all over the place of what's gone on in Oriel Park this year. So it's, once you know something like that starts going off. Look, we know that, I think it's safe to say the facts that we do know is, if someone can come up with a some sort of substantial agreement or offer, Peak Six would be willing to sell Dundalk Football Club and leave at the end of this year. I think that's the definite we can take from this.
I think the thing is, and I think supporters need to realize this, is, you know, we can hashtag and we can say Peak Six out. Peak Six are going. It's now a case of who's going to get the keys of Oriel Park. Like, they're not sticking around. So we have to just make sure. I think the Gallagher's actually a Fatima shop were interested, according to Flano, but maybe they're actually the ones that are heading up. StatSports is all a ruse. There's enough Freddo bars being sold for the consortium to take over there.
I think they're putting enough money behind the bar tonight as it is, so I wouldn't worry about that.
No, but yeah, no, as I say, the club is being sold. Peak Six are gone. It's just a case of who's going to get the keys of Oriel. Sorry, Chris, you go ahead there.
No, look, and like I say, the more the rumours come out of who's behind it all, there seem to be a real division, I suppose, very quickly online, only flowing in one way, of how much we'd prefer some sort of local ownership, as I think we've had kind of overseas foreign ownership, and our big concern at the moment with Peak Six is their lack of understanding for our community and how much this club means to just this town alone. And everybody in it, like you've talked about, you know, down to even mental health concerns people could have. It would be linked back to Dundalk Football Club sometimes. I just left up a little bit of information here. Kieran Burke and the lads in Between the Stripes had a number of polls up this week, and one of them there is, you know, over 500 votes in that, and it's massively in favour, nearly 80% towards the StatSports and Andy Connolly take over, compared to 6% for the Glentoran businessman. So it kind of says a lot about how we're feeling as well. I think there's also a nostalgic reason as well for thinking back to the Andy Connolly era. As it was so successful, you're thinking two local businessmen running it, and the number of local volunteers and individuals involved around the club. It was a good vibe, good feeling around the town then. They were doing, you know, kit deals and everything at the time with CX Plus, you know, another local company with horseware, and there was local people employed there. Fife as a main sponsor. You know, it was really that ownership with Paul Brown and Andy Connolly back then. Its roots were deep within this community. And I think we're all looking at that, at that ownership again and kind of saying, could we get back to that? Because that's what has gone wrong with this club this year. Under their ownership, I don't think you had a situation where the lads' stuff from the Shedside Army were binned. You know, I don't think that would have happened. And that's the difference. They knew that if they'd done that, that wouldn't be the right thing to do to a large group of supporters who are here to support a football club. If they didn't agree with what they're doing, there's a different way to deal with it, and just disposing of their equipment is not the way to do it. It's not the place to start slapping bans, lifetime bans on fans who want to voice their concerns. And right, okay, with the fireworks thing, like you say, there's a level of danger in it and that element, but there's also a way to deal with that in a different way. Like I said, we had fireworks issues under the Fast Fix lads. I think it could have been before, so you know, it's not like this is new, but I never remember a statement coming out saying there's lifetime bans coming.
Yeah, I think the worst at that time was the Palestine flags were waved during a European game.
We were getting fines for that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we got quite a substantial fine, so it was a little bit more understandable. But I think the club went directly to the Shedside Army and spoke to them about it as they released the statement. It wasn't kind of just thrown at them or anything like in the manner that it was. But yeah, I suppose my take on it, my honest opinion, absentee ownership we've seen over the last 2 years hasn't worked. You know, in the beginning, not that the Peak Six era was always perfect, but you had Martin Connolly's, like, it was very much still a case of business as usual for the first maybe year and a half of their ownership of the club. But the last 2 years, since Bill has taken over as chairman, it's just become more and more obvious that it's not been ran properly. So I would have a lot of concerns over another absentee owner coming in. The links that they've got, or potentially got, if you went down the rabbit hole the other day, I mean, that's people that I don't want associated with my football club, and I'd be very reluctant to support a team that maybe has money coming from those sources into the club, being completely honest. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we've obviously just spoke to, or we spoke a little bit about, over the last couple of weeks since the 1903 was founded, we had Lee on a couple of weeks ago. There was a discussion around, you know, supporters clubs getting involved in the ownership of the club or maybe going in with someone. And I think, you know, even going back to the summertime.
Yeah, I think Barry Lennon mentioned it as well.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, just saying when he was on, was saying it'd be great if there was some sort of opportunity, whether it's through the supporters club or not, that maybe the fans would get a chance with some sort of an owner to actually stake a claim in the club, and then obviously with the main goal of having some sort of a voice on the board then at that stage too.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the 1903 and the Lily White Ladies and all these supporters clubs would probably at some point have to come together and discuss how they want that to look, but these are all new things because there hasn't been a supporters group for so long, and I don't want to go over old ground that we've tackled all year kind of on the pod, but that's something that's going to take a little bit of time. But your best chance of getting that happening eventually is through in my opinion, local owners, you know, and I yeah. think the 50 plus one model is the way to go. And you know what, look, we've said all season that Oriel Park needs redeveloped. Could a supporter, a member of the supporters club, jump on the board with the key objective that the money raised from the supporters club is going to go towards upgrades in Oriel Park, and say yep. to the owners, like, there's already rumours that Stats Sports, part of their plan is they're going to rip out the Astro and put in grass field again, which everyone's delighted about. I mean, that's, and if you ask any players, they're going to be delighted with that too. So then, could these supporters groups go and say, can we get a seat on the board, and then we're going to just bit by bit raise money, and that's how you get your voice heard, you know? Because
I think that's what's, that Sligo's model in particular is, the fans are constantly fundraising for upgrades to the showgrounds, and I think when you look at it, like I said, we actually talked about it on the pod before, the wall that they have, and everyone was buying a plaque for like £100 or something like that, and your name gets immortalized in the showgrounds really forever. You know, I've seen it in Villa Park, the time they were getting upgrades done there before, and you could buy a tile on the floor and it's still there now, you know, and they're great little mementos for fans, but they actually contribute significant monies to the club for upgrades like that. And I think if there was some sort of local ownership, we would all feel that it'd be easier for us, I think, probably to get involved like that. And we know that, you know, you're going to see face to face to these owners. So if we're going to be putting forward proposals like this, that we would like to see that money earmarked for those sort of developments straight away. But I did see Brendan Ogle comment online this week saying that neither of these proposed consortium groups have reached out in any way to the 1903 anyway, to get a view on what supporters think or feel. So I suppose that's a little disappointing. That might have been something that they could have done, and come in and use that as an opportunity to say, well, actually, we've already been talking to your fans and these are the things we want to do. Because don't get me wrong, as much as Peak Six are wanting out and to get away, I also think they have a duty of care to this football club and to this community to hand this club over to an owner who will look after this club. And you can't just hand it to somebody because it's the best, it's the highest bid that they're going to get and it's money in their pockets. You have to think about the longevity of this club. And that might not be in their financial interest and what they want, but I'd like to think that somewhere in their conscience, they'll have that thought of, when we hand this over, is this the best person to really look after Dundalk Football Club? And that's what we need right now, more than anything, is some owners who care enough for Dundalk Football Club. Because I think right now, Peak Six probably don't care about us, and that's why we're seeing these things like what happened to the Shedside Army happen.
Yeah, and look, I just to go back to your first point on the 1903, I've heard nothing from the either consortium. I think probably legally they can't, you know, they can't show their cards or they can't show this is who we are or anything like that there, you know, while negotiations are ongoing. I could say with a great high degree of certainty that the local consortium is talking to supporters off the cuff. Maybe not necessarily the supporters group, but it wouldn't surprise me if there's conversation has been had to get a feel for what's going on, you know, over the last couple of, or the last week or so anyway. But yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. I think Peak Six have a great duty of care for what's to come going forward, you know, with the sale. And for them, they've just obviously bought a minority stake in Wolverhampton Wanderers in the Premier League. And looking at that, I see two options, right? So I see it where this Northern group, who supporters right now, the more we're learning about them, the more we're like, we don't really want them to take over the club.
Yeah.
They're offering more money by all accounts. Again, just going, it's speculation again, but they're offering more money than the local consortium is for the club. So Peak Six have that option where they can get more money and not get great PR, or they can go with the local group and take a financial hit, but then it's better PR for them because it's like, right, we've messed up, but we're leaving it in capable hands. You know, we're leaving it in the hands of people that we believe have the best interest of Dundalk Football Club at heart. You know, and that has to be, that has to play into it. When you've taken on a stake in Monaco, who's one of the top, like, I know it's Monaco Ladies, but it's one of the top clubs in Europe, in France and in Europe. But you've got that, and then you've got the minority stake in Wolves. Like, they have to try and make themselves look somewhat good. And Dundalk might not be big fry, but Dundalk's coming from, in the last 5 years, we've spent two seasons in the Europa League group stages. We've won the league, and over the last 2 years, we haven't, in the last 5 years, I think we've won it, what, twice in the last 5 years, won cups. So that's why I think the club needs to be put into the right hands. And I think that's why Peak Six have that, as you say, that duty of care. But I think they need to look at, and look, I'm no expert in this field, but affect the finances. 100 grand. Like, they said a six-figure sum is what they're going to get. 500 grand is nothing to Peak Six. Like, this is a billion-dollar company. So they should be looking at what's the best PR for them. And in my opinion, it's the local consortium. And that's, if the people involved are those who've been muted, like Stat Sports and Andy Connolly, and that, they're the people that I want to take over the club. Because you've got, in Andy Connolly, you've got someone that has done it once, so he knows what it takes to run a League of Ireland club. And you've got Stat Sports, who, you know, they're another billion-dollar industry, you know, or they're in a billion-dollar industry in the GPS, but they've got connections going out their eyeballs, you know, in football, globally. So that hopefully can only be a good thing for the club too. So yeah, that's, look, at in a nutshell, a long-winded way, but I would hope common sense will prevail. And I feel like if the deal was done with the Northern Group over the last few days, and now they're saying to the local owners, you've got a week to come up with a better proposal for us, I feel like maybe, and I could be reading too much into it, but maybe they're just starting to swing the other way.
Hopefully. Well, look, we said we'd only just pop on for a short one tonight, and we're flying here. Can I just get your man of the match then tonight, Pingu?
No, I'm conflicted. No, I'm going to go with Murray because I just thought he was brilliant tonight. I feel bad for Domagan because I'd like to give it to him, but I just think Murray was a different class today.
Yeah, I go for Murray as well. I think we showed our hand early with that one. Quick scan through, there was plenty for Cherry, plenty for actually a couple of different players here tonight again. So that's good, always good to see. One for Murray. Let's go, Stephen McAvoy. You happy enough?
Perfect. Yeah.
Yep. Stephen McAvoy is the winner of our Tony's Pizzeria 15-inch pizza tonight. So make sure you do tag us in on that. Look, I think that's probably it for tonight for ourselves. We'll be back whenever. The next game is, I think it was a heap of fixture changes, so I'll be damned if I can remember when everything is anymore.
Thursday.
Thursday. Is that the Drogs match?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, look, we'll be back when that's there. I think people are devastated that Peter Cherry probably didn't get this nod tonight for a couple of fantastic saves. But, look, that's the way it is. I think for Murray's energy and everything else in particular, yeah, bang on. Look, Pingu, thanks so much for tonight. Thanks, everybody, for all their comments. As I say, we'll be back again fairly soon after the next match. Until then,
give us back our club to the locals.